Gravity Cafe down here in Eau Claire. Mr. Steph Smith, how are you, sir?
I'm great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You guys have an off day today?
Yeah.
Much needed, or?
Definitely. It's been a crazy little stretch just to finish up the regular season, so a little off day, some optional shooting, some work in if you can, but definitely need these off days leading up to this playoff push.
I saw the highlights from what was that, Saturday,
mm-hmm.
in Saskatoon.
Mm-hmm.
Game went in three.
Yeah.
Ended their season.
Yeah.
Did you call game? I saw maybe you did.
Yeah, I mean, once they hit their three to tie it up at 89, in my head I was just like, I don't want to give them a chance to win the game. So, I was kind of just like, I'm going to take this shot. Felt good about it.
Felt good? Yeah, you got a good look?
Yeah.
Coming off a bit of a screen there from Simi? Or
Is
it Simi?
Yeah, I think it was Simi that set the screen,
Awesome. Well, you got the playoffs coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a short playoff.
Pretty short.
Hopefully you get, what's the max amount of games? You get four or three because you got the bye.
Three now, yep.
Awesome. How, I guess looking back, a little bit of time, got a day to look back on the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rate it for yourself and your development over the last couple months here?
Yeah, I think individually it was a huge learning experience for me this summer just to try to get better. Offensively, defensively, and also just stepping into this role as being a captain and being a leader and try to, connect with a bunch of guys from, different backgrounds, different personalities, different areas. And, I haven't really done something like this since kind of high school.
Right.
So for me to be the vocal leader, for coach to give me so much confidence just to use my voice, lead by example as well, it was great for me, I think, as a basketball player, as a development to be, a point guard and a leader moving forward.
Yeah. It was an interesting kind of an expansion team. I mean, you did mm-hmm. have the year last year in Guelph, but you're in a new city. Almost all new teammates?
Yeah. Only teammate currently right now that I played with in Guelph was Ruggsy. Well, Ruggsy and Mo Kalou.
Okay.
Yeah.
So pretty much a new team, new city. Had you been to Calgary before?
No, this was my first time.
Yeah.
First time being in Calgary.
So you pull up. What were you kind of expecting heading into the year? Kind of maybe take me back a couple of months. What were you thinking when you first pulled up to Calgary?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was excited because being an East Coast guy, most of my life, I went to school in the East, in the States, live in the Toronto area for, my entire life. So only been on the West Coast a few times. Yeah. So kind of just being here for a whole summer, I was excited, and I heard a lot about Calgary, never been, so I always wanted to visit. So, and then the organization I knew was just going to be super professional, from the top to the bottom. It was just really professional, and a lot of media stuff this year. I feel like last year in Guelph it was obviously they didn't have the media presence, but we were doing so much in the community this year. We're going out to events, interacting with the community, and I think that's something that Calgary Search took that to a whole nother level, compared to what we did in Guelph last year. I can't even remember, I think we maybe did a few volunteer events and stuff like that, so I think it was just really good to kind of capture the community. And obviously having pro basketball here back in Calgary is huge for the people here and the residents and stuff like that, and hopefully it inspires a lot of young kids to want to play basketball and to kind of grow the game in the city.
Did it, just watching the end of the last home game,
mm-hmm.
you hit the winning basket in that one too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The crowd was unreal. Mm-hmm. I've been to a lot of sporting events, and it kind of gives shivers thinking back to that. Did that surpass your expectation when you were kind of heading here?
Yeah, that's another thing too that I was, really happy to see, because in Guelph it wasn't the fan support was pretty good, but it'd be pretty half empty, some games and stuff like that. And almost every home game it feels like it's been sold out, just from the energy of the crowd. Obviously it's not a huge arena like when you compare it to like Winnipeg or Niagara or something like that, but it just gets so loud, with how many fans we get, it's super loud and super supportive. So that was something I was, in awe about, and they've supported us our whole season, and really excited to see what the crowd looks like for the playoff game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jason and the team have done it. We had him on the podcast back in March, and mm-hmm. he talked about the approach they wanted to take and how they felt like they could really tap in at the community level
mm-hmm.
Without having to maybe go over the top with, you know, different types of marketing, just like really get ingrained at the community level and the people will come.
Yeah.
And it feels like to me as a fan, season ticket holder, someone who really was there at every game, that mm-hmm. they accomplished that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, Jason's done a great job. And, you know, the whole organization has just done a great job of interacting with people. You know, the guys on the team are good basketball players, but they're great, you know, great people as well. You know, so we're out in the community. We're interacting with those that, you know, we see with surge gear on, and, you know, we're thanking them for support and stuff like that. So I think when you have kind of, you know, the group of guys that we have on this team and, you know, who's all very welcoming, you know, all these events, we're not just, you know, sitting there and on our phones, we're interacting with people, we're getting to know them, we're asking questions, you know, people really appreciate that kind of stuff. So I think it goes a long way.
Surging and purging.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Curious in terms of the adjustment to the new city, mm-hmm. how much did it help having a bunch of guys that are mostly from your area? You probably grew up playing against or with in some cases. Did that make that whole, like, getting comfortable here a little bit easier?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Definitely just having people that, you know, talk like you and, you know kind of like how you grew up and, you know, no, things like, you know, just like the restaurants that we used to eat at and, like, you know, places we used to play basketball games and stuff like that. It's nice to have, you know, so it was definitely cool having that. And, you know, just like I said, you know, Ruggsy was my roommate last year in Guelph. He's my roommate this year.
Right.
So super comfortable with just, you know, the relationship I have with him. And, you know, it's just like, it's great. It's great to see that, you know, especially with me and him. It was like last year, there was lots of times when we were at Guelph and, you know, it was our first year, we were struggling and we didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, I think it's a blessing that we've both been able to kind of step into a bigger role and, you know, had like an impact on the team that we've had.
Yeah, I really noticed last game, Ruggsy, he had a game too,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
On both ends of the floor.
Yeah,
well, what's sort of your scouting assessment on him, having played with him for a mm-hmm. couple of years? I mean, obviously athleticism, mm-hmm. unbelievable.
Yeah.
What else have you kind of seen maybe grow in his game over that time?
Yeah, Ruggsy's really become just like an all-around player. Like, you know, it's not just a lot. I think a lot of people, you know, would just think, oh, he's just a high flyer, just athletic. But, you know, he's improved, you know, a lot since, you know. And I think he's always had it in him in college. But, you know, we've talked about this all the time. Like, sometimes you go to a school and they don't really know how to utilize your gifts and your talents.
Yeah.
And
you got someone that's kind of does similar things, right, and so you kind of get blocked or whatever.
Right. You know, so I think he's always had it in him. I think he's been in the gym a lot this summer, even last summer, you know, after Guelph. And so, like, he's just been in the gym, you know. So that, and then, you know, I know he's big on watching film. So he's just doing things to improve himself as a basketball player, and, you know, his shot starting to, you know, fall a lot more, which is great for him. And, you know, I think, you know, for him, it's the sky's the limit. You know what I mean? You can't teach his athleticism. So, and he's continuing to improve, you know, skill wise. So, you know, I'm definitely excited to see where he ends up.
Yeah, it is really cool to think about all the guys that are playing here right now and mm-hmm. just see how that splinters out into, mm-hmm. you know, the professional ranks, whether that be NBA, Europe, et cetera. It seems like there's a lot of guys on this team that are going to get some looks and opportunities.
For sure, for sure.
Who would you say, and I'm super curious what your opinion mm-hmm. is, who's the most underrated player on the team right now? Maybe does a lot of little things that mm-hmm. people might not pick up on, but you're like, man, he's on point.
Yeah. Man, there's two people that come to mind. I would say AG,
okay,
Admiron Gilder or Mason, for sure.
Yep.
You know, those two guys are extremely hard workers. You know, they're tenacious on the defensive end, especially AG. AG, I think, is a guy that he could easily, you know, be top two, top three in scoring on our team if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But I think he really just knows his role. He's embracing his role. And, you know, we look at him as the primary defender. You know, whoever the guys, you know, the other team's best player is, best scorer, and, you know, we put AG on him. And, you know, he's physical.
It's a big responsibility.
Yeah.
Especially with some of the guys I think have come through, like Teddy Allen or mm-hmm. Pat Barber. Like, mm-hmm. those guys can put buckets in.
Right, Foreman, yeah, all those guys. So, you know, with him, and that takes a lot of energy on the defensive end, you know, because I've been in that position when, you know, I was playing at St. John's, is like, you know, I was known as like a defender first, so that takes a lot of energy. And then to still be able to score and rebound and, you know, do all those things is hard, you know what I mean? And then obviously someone like Mason, who, you know, is a U Sports guy.
Kelowna kid, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, yeah. Kelowna, BC. And, you know, for him to just step into this role, you know, from training camp, he impressed me, really, you know what I mean, with just how vocal he was, you know, how focused he is. I think that's one thing with Mason that's going to take him a long way. He's just really dialed in. He's always focused. So, you know, I think both of those guys really impressed me. And, you know, there's a lot of – all of our guys, you know, have great abilities, great talents, you know what I mean? So,
well, hence first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of an achievement, especially for essentially a first-year team.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you, kind of getting that? I mean, obviously you're going for the championship, but, like, to get that first place in this season in particular.
Mm-hmm. It's big. It's definitely big. I think this season was – pretty competitive season throughout the league. You can tell there wasn't really a team that, you know, ended up 16-4 or anything like that. You know, a lot of the records are pretty similar, so it was a super competitive year. And, you know, I know we had a really hot start, 5-1, and kind of, you know, slow down a little bit, but just to be able to kind of persevere and pick it up and still come first is huge. Like you said, it's our first year here, and, you know, it's definitely a great accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think obviously everyone on the team is like, you know, we're looking to get that championship. So it's a great accomplishment. And, you know, we enjoyed it. We celebrated. But now it's, you know, starting tomorrow, we're going to get back to work and just focus on our next playoff game.
Curious in that little down spell there, mm-hmm. a lot of road games. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything about your season? I don't think you played a home game for almost a month there. Like, that was, it was quite a gap. What did you learn anything about yourself or your game as you kind of went through that process and came out the other side?
Yeah, so, you know, for me, there was a stretch of games where, you know, I was getting a lot of high assist numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was kind of the start of the year, I kind of struggled a lot with my shooting and scoring. And I think I kind of just changed my approach and, you know, like, I don't need to score with the guys that we have on the team. You know, we have Simi, we have Ruggsy, we have Trey Scott, we have you know, we got a lot of scorers on our team, so it's like, you know, let me try to facilitate the ball a little bit more. Yeah. And, you know, I think once I started getting comfortable with that, you know, the scoring also ended up, you know, popping up as well.
Did it just, like, open up some different looks or lanes that maybe you were kind of trying to force before?
Yeah, that's what it was. You know, watched a lot of film and kind of looked back, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, I don't need to do too much, you know what I mean? I think I was still a little bit in that mode where, you know, when I was back in Serbia, the coach was literally just telling me to score, like, just I don't care if you're shooting over two people, like, just score the ball. And I think being able to shift that mindset and just seeing you know, how I can involve my teammates was great. And, you know, obviously we weren't winning as many games as we probably wanted to, but that was more of just like a defensive thing and an execution thing. And, you know, I think we really got intentional on, like, how to clean up those things and lock in on those things. And I think that's why we ended up getting on a 4-game winning streak or whatever it was to end the regular season. And so we learned a lot about ourselves as a team. But for me individually, I feel like, you know, I kind of learned that, okay, you know, I can pass the ball at this level, I can distribute, you know, it's not just all about scoring. So
great insights, and I'm sure those will serve you for a long time. Mm-hmm. One thing, and from my perspective, any great team I've ever been a part of, whether it's business, sports, whatever, is there's great peer-to-peer accountability. Mm-hmm. So on the floor, is that something you guys kind of had from day one, or have you kind of had to figure that out as you go a little bit? Or what's the accountability like in the room?
Yeah, I think for sure that was something that we really had to look at ourselves after we had, you know, those losses and stuff like that, and we, you know, try to just talk about, okay, how are we going to hold ourselves accountable, mm-hmm. without, you know, it turning into something personal, or, you know, guys, you know, having their egos hurt or whatever like that. So that was definitely something that we had to do as a team. And, you know, I think all great teams go through things like that. And you know, I think we just accepted it and kind of turned the corner with that,
found the way.
Mm-hmm.
What lost my train of thought there for a second, but in terms of the business of basketball, mm-hmm. You've kind of two questions. One, what attracted you to the CEBL in the first place? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, last year it would have been like their third, fourth year. It's still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you in here? And then as you've seen the mechanics of the behind the scenes of the business of basketball, what have you kind of learned in these first couple of years playing, being a pro?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think initially for me coming out of college, you know, I was like, you know, I want to get pro experience right away. And so it was either, you know, play in the CBL, get some experience, you know, kind of learn some things, you know, or kind of just be at home and just train the whole summer. And, I thought it was a no-brainer for me to, you know, play with guys like Cat Barber, Ahmed Hill, you know, who just both got 1,000 points in the CBL, learn from a great coach like Charles Kissy, who, you know, has been in the G League for a few years and has coached at many levels and stuff like that. So
yeah.
For me, it was just like, you know, I heard about the CBL. I watched it a little bit. I knew a few people that played in it, but I didn't know too much about what it was about. Yeah. So
going you kind of see Xavier Moon doing his thing and building up like a bit of folklore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So going into it, it was kind of like, you know, I didn't have super high expectations, but then I was there and I was like, okay, this is, you know, this is the real deal. I think a lot of people kind of don't realize that, you know, there's some really good basketball players in this league. And hence why it's growing, you know, it's on TSN now and all that stuff. So, you know, it's definitely a business as well. You know, you got to be able to kind of switch it over from college where, you know, you're on scholarship, you know, they can't really like just like release you, you know, you're there, you're doing your thing, whatever, but you're still in school. Now it's like, this is your job, you know, this is your job. Obviously you're still playing. I still play because I love the game. It's fun, but at the same time, it's still a job. So now you have to really take it seriously and understand that, you know, if you have a few bad games, you know, you might get cut. Like, that's just the reality of it. So especially in Guelph last year, there was like a bunch of guys that were in for 3-4 games, got cut, a few guys came in, and it was just like a lot to kind of see, you know what I mean?
And I presume those guys were all talented
in
their own right, not the right fit, whatever the case, but so that was a bit eye-opening for you, like, oh shit, like they're in and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just like, okay, like how do I mentally, you know, don't want to stress myself out and be like, I got to play well and I get cut. And I think, honestly, that, you know, Charles Kissy, he really helped me kind of just, like, learn through that and grow. Because at the start of the season, I definitely struggled. I struggled a lot. And, you know, playing behind guys like Cat and Med, like, you know, there wasn't too much opportunity for me to feel like, you know, showcase what I could do. But then, you know, the second half of the season, I started playing really well. Was getting more minutes and started, you know, gaining my confidence back. So, you know, I think, you know, just going into this year, it was kind of just like, all right, I know what to expect from this league now. I know how things work, so I'm just more comfortable now.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get linked up with Stacey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically Shane James, who's the GM for the team.
Yeah.
You know, I've known Shane from way back when I was, you know, playing growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was at the time reaching out to a lot of different agents and stuff like that. But he just hit me up and was like, yo, I have an agent for you that's interested, and that's how we kind of just got connected. But, yeah, because for me, I was really I really wanted to try to get into the G League, you know, coming out of that first year. And so a lot of the agents I was talking to were mostly just FIBA agents overseas and stuff like that. So she was the agent that kind of had, you know, that NBA certification and stuff like that. So got connected with her, and then, you know, the Kissy, I knew Kissy from high school too. He used to watch my games, and my AU coach, O'Neal Kamaka, kind of linked me up with him and just talked to, I just had a phone call with him and just saw my, basically just heard him out and was like, okay, let's do it.
Nice. Yeah. And so coming, like looking forward, not looking forward too much, but like G League, sort of the next sort of step for you, or are you thinking Europe, or you're just kind of open to whatever opportunities come up and assess from there?
Yeah, honestly, I'm kind of just open to anything right now. I'm not too set on, you know, I got to get in the G League next year. I got to, you know, do this. Obviously, everyone's goal and dream is to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm still hopeful of that dream and goal. So, for now, you know, I'm going to, you know, take care of business here. And then when I go to France, you know, that's going to be a long, you know, 9-10 month season.
Right.
And, you know, I think from that, you know, seeing how I do well over there, that's going to kind of, you know, show me, like, you know, my trajectory. So, basically, I think, for me, it's not really, I'm not really too concerned about, you know, I got to play in this league, I got to play in this league. You know, as long as I'm enjoying it, you know, playing basketball, you know, being in France, like, that's going to be a great experience.
Seeing super
a new,
dope.
Yeah, seeing a new, you know, part of the world and stuff like that. So I'm just trying to take it one day at a time, and, you know, whatever happens kind of happens. It's all, you know, it's all in God's plan, you know, it's all written out. So I'm not really too stressed about that kind of stuff.
Nice. That's, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, too, you talked about, you know, managing your mindset and, mm-hmm. and sort of your stress load. I'm curious, as an elite athlete, how do you know when maybe you need to tweak something mentally or that you are under stress?
Mm-hmm.
And do you have, like, some things in your tool belt that you pull out once you recognize that?
Yeah, for sure. So I think it's easy as a pro athlete to be, like, you know, stubborn and be like, okay, like, you know, I know it all. You know, I've been through college and, you know, I've played in March Madness, I played in big games, I played on the national team, like, you know what I mean? So it's easy to kind of get into that mode where it's like, I know it all, but, you know, you're always learning. So you always got to learn about yourself. And, you know, sometimes there might be, you know, a few stretches where you're not playing well or something's happening. And for me, the big thing I do is meditation. Meditating, reading, trying to just take my mind off of basketball sometimes, you know. Sometimes I have a perfectionist mindset, so especially in high school, I used to put a lot of pressure on myself to just be perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, even at times now, I still do that. So being able to meditate, you know, just doing like 5-10 minutes of just, you know, deep breathing and mindfulness and kind of just clearing my mind, that stuff really helps. And then other hobbies that I like to do is like play chess. You know, that's something that kind of just relaxes me and it's fun. And then reading and stuff like that is also cool. So it's really important to, like, you know, do other things. Like, you can be a professional athlete and not always 24/7 be, you know, focused on your profession, you know what I mean? So I think that's a big thing to kind of release some of that mental stress, and that's what I've been doing, and it's been working pretty well for me.
Do you have are you like a Calm guy, like the app, or do you have some different guided meditations
so,
you like?
Yeah, so I started out with Calm, but now I kind of just throw on, you know, some, like, soothing, like, meditation music, and I'll just kind of just, you know, sit down, close my eyes, and kind of just meditate, just, you know, be with myself and stuff like that, and that's kind of how I do it. And it can be at any time of the day. It can be when I wake up, or sometimes before I go to bed, before the game, even a few times at halftime. Like, if I'm not playing too well in the first half, you know, I'll meditate at halftime when I'm on the bench, and kind of just reset.
How long can you, that it is harder than it sounds to just do like a solo meditation.
Yeah.
Can you do that for like 10-15 or?
Yeah, I think the longest I've ever done is 20 minutes.
20, yeah.
But that was, yeah, 20 minutes is tough.
It is.
20 minutes is really tough. Even 5 minutes is tough because you get into it and then you kind of start, it's easy to start wanting to think or your mind starts to wander. And, you know, I think if anyone's trying to do it, you know, that's okay. Like, if a few first times your mind wanders a little bit or you're not really focused on your breath, like, that's okay. You just have to keep practicing it.
It's like, yeah, it's like working out at the gym.
Yeah,
just gotta keep.
Yeah.
There was a guided meditation. How I got into meditation actually was during COVID. I stumbled upon the RZA. He has a guided meditation album.
Okay.
And I don't know why. It was just, I really liked it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like 5 different ones, so it's like one for each day of the week, and they're like 3 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
But just the sort of reflections that he put out there, just like, I don't know, they really helped me. So you kind of never really know where you're going to find that inspiration.
Right.
But once you do, and then just start practicing it, it can be so, so helpful.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
As you just had a camp on the weekend.
So we actually didn't actually get to run the camp. We didn't have enough now. We didn't have enough numbers. So
okay.
Hopefully we can try to do it again before we leave.
Before
but,
you leave, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't end up getting to do it.
Have you gotten a chance to see much of the local kids play at all?
You know what? I haven't.
No?
I haven't. Not too much. You know, I've been to West Island College a few times just to get, like, extra work in, training in, and you know, some of, you know, Dean and Family Hoops, he has, like, some of his guys over there that were helping us out and stuff like that. So, but I wanted to actually go out and see some guys play and do that, but I just haven't got a chance with, you know, in our schedule.
Okay. I was going to ask you your scouting report, see if you had any insights yet, but maybe, well, I guess you'll probably be gone by then. So I'm coach a middle school team out in Bragg Creek where I'm at, and we got a couple of kids that can really ball, man.
That's good.
Yeah. That's good, man. And I do think there's a culture here for basketball.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't think Well, I know we've never had an NBA player come out of here, but, you know, maybe in the next 5 to 10.
Yeah, no doubt.
Who's coming up in the Canadian scene that you know about maybe back home that people should have their eye out for?
In high school? Or
yeah,
like
a FOSA maybe?
You know what's crazy? I'm not really too in tune with the high school guys anymore. No, not really. One of my boys, Jalen Celestine, he's coming out of Cal Berkeley.
Yeah.
A really good player. He's been battling some injuries and stuff like that, but he's someone that I feel like, you know, his game and his kind of physical, you know, attributes, I feel like he'd do really well in the G League or in the NBA. So he's someone, and he's from Ajax, so, you know, we gotta represent our hometown well. But there's a bunch of guys, man. There's a bunch of hoopers that even in this league, in the CBL, that, you know, we play against them and they say, you know, they're from Canada. I'm like, I've never even heard of this guy, but this guy can hoop. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of guys.
Well, when I was a kid coming up, it was basically Steve Nash. There was a guy, Todd McCullough. He played for the Sixers with Iverson.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think Rick Fox is technically Canadian. So there was like a couple of guys, but, you know, really it was Nash. Now you go through the rosters and there's a Canadian guy on almost every team.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the things I really like about the NBA is you can turn on a game anytime, any night, and you're going to get some Canadian content, which is super cool.
Yeah.
How do you think the Canadian game, what do you see as the trajectory? I mean, even the group they've assembled to do the FIBA tournament here, unreal.
Yeah.
Where do you kind of see Canada basketball headed?
Man, I think Canada's on the right direction. You know, they're catching up the powerhouses, you know, USA and Spain and Serbia and you know, teams like that. So I feel like, you know, they're on the rise, you know, and it's great to see that there's guys, you know, getting drafted every year from Canada. There's guys that, you know, Shea just made first team All NBA.
Jamal won the chip.
Yeah, Jamal won the chip and stuff like that, you know. Wiggins won the chip before that, year before that. So it's great. It's great to see, and I think, you know, it's just going to continue to inspire, because for me, you know, growing up, it was me watching Vince Carter and Allen Iverson, you know what I mean? And now it's a lot of these guys are watching, you know, Shea, Jamal, and, you know, all those guys that are playing in the league that are doing really well. So for me, I think it's just going to be a matter of time. You know, it's just we're slowly creeping up to the powerhouses, and, you know, it's going to be – when we get there, you'll see. It's going to be great.
Have you had a chance to hoop with any of those guys at, like, open gyms or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think it was, like, maybe 2 summers ago or 3 summers ago, I forget. But I hooped with some of those guys in, like, an open gym setting, and then played against Jamal in high school. I'm trying to think who else. RJ I played with in the national team.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else. Andrew, same thing with Andrew Nembhard too. We played on the national team together, kind of grew up playing against each other a lot. So
Mathurin, did he play?
No, I didn't play against him. No,
he had a hell of a rookie year.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Lou Dort too, played against him and with him in BioSteel, Canadian and stuff like that. So yeah, those guys are great players, man. So it's just going to, like I said, the numbers are just going to continue to add up. You know, every year someone's getting drafted every year. You know, there's a new player coming up, you know, through the ranks. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, Leonard Miller drafted this year.
Oh, yeah, played with Leonard. It's funny because Leonard, I went to school with his older brother, Emmanuel. And we ended up playing on the Global Jam team together too. But Leonard was, when I was in high school, Leonard, you know, was just that kid that was trying to get on the court after us, you know, after our practices and stuff. And, you know, he's, you know, shooting on the side and stuff like that. So just to see him grow is crazy to me, because, you know, I remember him as like this, you know, 6'1", 6'2" kid that was always just shooting and, you know, had this, you know, big feet, but, like, you know, wasn't very coordinated and stuff like that. And now he's, you know, he's gonna have a great rookie year and played really well in summer league. So yeah, it's just crazy to see stuff like that, and that's why I'm saying, like, you never know who it's gonna be, because you know, that's just kind of the nature of the game now. People are growing, people are seeing, you know, what, you know, these guys are doing, and it's just going to continue to grow.
And it's a great point, and it when you say you never know, it reminds me of the Dennis Rodman story, where basically he went from being like he was like 5'10 to like 6'5 in one summer when he was like 18. But I'm assuming he had the developmental skills when he got that body. All of a sudden, it made him that much better.
Yeah.
So for kids that are, you know, some of the grade 7, 8 kids that we're coaching, I'll probably pass this on to them. What would you say is like one or two of the most important things for them to really work on in those younger years as they, you know, prepare for? Well, they, you don't know. You don't know what your growth spurt might be. You don't know what the opportunity might be. But where would you focus your effort?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for sure, you know, the fundamentals, you got to be super sharp on the fundamentals. So skills like passing, shooting, dribbling, you know, because, you know, a lot of those guys, like you said, that were short, you know, you look at someone like Anthony Davis, his story, you know, when he was, you know, basically the size of a guard in high school and then got growth spurt. But he carried those guard skills over, and that's what made him, you know, such a unique player, because now he's 7 foot, but he has a skill set of a guard. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's honestly, especially in the NBA, that's kind of the name of the game right now. You know, a lot of these guys that are, you know, you look at Luka, you know, he's 6'7" or whatever. He's pretty big body, but he has the guard skills, you know. You look at, you know, Wemby, you know what I mean? Like he has guard skills at 7'4", 7'3", whatever it is. So
tough to model your game after.
Yeah, you can't model your game. Yeah, but you just never know, like, where you're going to end up being. You know, I think the biggest problem with kids when they grow up is coaches sometimes try to put them in the box and be like, okay, you're 5'6" right now, you're going to be a guard when you're older. And they don't know that this kid might shoot up to 6'6", 6'7",
right,
and have to be a wing and has that skill set. So it's just important that you kind of work on everything. You know, it doesn't matter if you're labeled as a big in grade 6, grade 7, whatever it is, like, you got to still be able to shoot the ball really well. Yeah. You still got to be able to dribble, pass, defend. So I think for me, it's kind of just like work on all the fundamental skills. You know what I mean? You want to be able to do it all. That's what makes, you know, players unstoppable in the NBA. Like, you know, same thing with Kevin Durant. You know, he's basically 7 footer, but he's one of the best scorers, and he can shoot, he can dribble, he can do all those things. So, and he probably wouldn't have been able to do that if someone told him, like, yo, you're going to be, you know, 7 feet, so work on your post moves. Just go on the post.
That would not have served him very well.
Yeah, exactly.
How important do you think it is for the younger players to be able to start to develop, to be able to go either way off on their offhand, and be able to kind of have that same level?
That's a big thing, too. That's super, super important, because, you know, at the highest levels, you know, you have to be able to use both hands, just because of the nature of the game. So, you know, working on your weak hand, honestly, your non-dominant hand, work on it more than your strong hand, you know. So if you're doing, you know, a dribbling workout and you're going for 10 minutes, maybe 6 or 7 of those minutes is with your weak hand, doing weak hand, you know, in and outs, you know, ankle dribbles, you know, shoulder pounds, stuff like that. Or if you're going and you're doing layups, you know, work on, you know, 60% of your finishes should be on your non-dominant hand. So, and that just kind of gets you, you know, ready to kind of get more comfortable. And, you know, that's definitely something super important that, you know, you'll see all the NBA guys can do. And all the, especially the elite players, they can all, you know, do that. You know, Steph Curry, you see he does his floaters and his layups and stuff. He does that with both hands. So, you know, that's definitely like a big thing that you want to work on at a young age and continue to carry that on.
How do you, you know, young kids, they watch Steph. They want to be like Steph. Most of the time, like, I don't have a group of 20 or 30 kids out to a session, you ask who the favorite player is, and almost, I would say, 8 out of 10 kids are saying Steph. I think it's because he's very relatable. He's like, you look at him and it's like, oh, I could do that. How do you manage that, you know, doing the floaters and the threes and the finger rolls versus the fundamentals? Like, at what point do you think a kid goes from, okay, you've fundamentally got it, now try this? As a coach, it's kind of tough because you don't want to, like, stifle creativity, but it's like, okay, once you've got layups down, now we'll work on the next thing.
Right.
And it seems like some kids just want to jump straight to that.
Honestly, he changed the game of basketball in a lot of ways. You know, obviously everyone wants to shoot threes now. It's important to get the fundamentals down first. And like you said, having that creativity is always good, though, too. But for me, I feel like if you get the fundamental stuff down first and then you start to move on to the more advanced stuff, then, you know, I feel like that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want to go into a game and be trying to do all this fancy stuff that, you know, you haven't yet mastered the fundamental stuff. And, you know, honestly, a lot of coaches, you know, at the Division I level and, you know, here in the CBL and the pros, they don't care too much about the fancy stuff. You know, they want to make sure you can be productive and, you know, get the job done. So, you know.
How many hours a week do you think you still spend on fundamentals as an elite player in a professional league? How many are, like, doing the basics?
That's a good question. Honestly, if I'm being honest with you, I probably don't even spend enough because, you know, kind of just like, and it's different playing in this league because in college it was, you know, I was in the gym all the time in college, you know what I mean? And, you know, I always start my shooting workouts with form shooting, like always, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of just form shooting, working on, you know, fundamental stuff and, you know, doing.
I mean, even that, like 10 to 15 minutes each time, that you aggregate that over a week, over a month, it's a few hours,
adds
right?
Up for sure. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely important to do that, you know, ball handling drills, stuff like that. And, you know, it's easy to go in the gym and just want to just start shoot threes or, you know, do fancy, you know, moves and stuff like that. But if you kind of have that base down, you know, it's always good to have that base because you can fall back on it. And then, like I said, once you feel comfortable that you've mastered that kind of stuff or you have a really good understanding, then you can kind of move on to the more fancy things. And it's also important to know why you're doing those things.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people will see Steph just do, like, an underhand floater and be like, okay, that looks cool. Like, let me try that. But they don't understand, like, okay, maybe it's just the angle that he's attacking the basket and the angle the defender's coming from that, you know, it makes sense for him to just do a scoop layup.
And he probably practiced that for, like, 6 hours.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, oh, that's really cool. What, maybe just pivoting a little bit, tell me a little bit about Connecting Creators and some of the other stuff that you're working on.
Yeah. So Connecting Creators podcast, that's a podcast me and my boy has, Stephen Perry, shout out to him. He does a lot of the heavy lifting, and he's done a really good job of just, like, networking with a lot of people, a lot of creators in Toronto. So we really try to just interview people who, you know, not just athletes, but, you know, athletes, content creators, you know, whether they're artists, singers, producers, stuff like that, you know, just kind of understand how they think, how they operate, and kind of just find, you know, a lot of the common things that make people great, you know, regardless of what field they're in. So that's kind of just a podcast that we continue to try to work on every summer, and, you know, hopefully we can continue to grow it into a little brand. And it's kind of just something that we enjoy doing as well, you know, just interacting with people that, you know, maybe have been overlooked or don't have the platform to kind of be talked about.
Yeah.
So it's been great. It's been really good. And, you know, he's definitely done a lot of, like, you know, the editing and networking and stuff like that. So shout out to him.
It's amazing to me. People often ask, like, you know, what's the benefit of podcasting, or what are the benefits of podcasting? People automatically go to monetization, which is, like, cool. If you can get to there, awesome. And, and we've had some luck in that. But to me, it's the ultimate connector.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you would have told me half the people that I've been able to connect with over the last 3 years just by having a podcast, that's really where the value is. So I wish you luck, and hopefully you guys can have a lot of success with that. And creativity, I think, is a really interesting topic.
Jumped
into that, and I think people think of creativity as writing a song or painting a picture, but it's really, like, everywhere.
Right.
And I'm curious, like, have you kind of landed on a bit of a definition of creativity for yourself? Or
yeah, you know, I feel like I'm still working on that. You know, I think it's definitely, you know, just how I am as a person. I feel like, you know, I'm not just a basketball player, you know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, I'm able to kind of dip my toes in a lot of different things, you know. So, and, you know, like I brought up, you know, I love playing chess, you know. I used to play the saxophone when I was growing up, and, you know, definitely want to get back into stuff like that. So, you know, I feel like just being around, you know, someone like Steven, who, you know, he's a super creative person, super smart guy, and, you know, kind of just finding, you know, like, what we enjoy doing, you know, and it's not just one thing. So definitely just something that I continue to learn and grow and learn about myself as I get older.
Yeah, there's one definition. You can borrow anything from this if you like it. I heard it. We had a guest on a couple of years ago. And his definition of creativity was connecting things that have never been connected to make things that are both new and useful.
Mm. Wow, that's a good quote.
It's cool because you can apply it to anything.
Anything, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, and then with your unique life experience, obviously you see things differently. So, anyway, something for you.
For sure.
A little gift.
Appreciate that.
One last question, and I know you got to work out, you got to get to here. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite song to sing along to?
Favorite song to sing along to?
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's a tough one.
Are you like a karaoke guy or more of a car?
Man, I love music, so yeah. I'll be singing wherever, but... I'm trying to think of one that's not like too like recent. Like I'm trying to think of like a classic, like growing up.
Yeah. Were your parents big music people?
Yeah. Huge.
Records and stuff?
Yeah. My mom has a few records. You know what, honestly, probably Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I still am a big Michael Jackson fan, but my parents are obviously big Michael Jackson people, so growing up, I listened to a lot of MJ.
Any other favorites in there?
There's a song called Rockaway by Barris Hammond, who's a Jamaican artist, reggae singer.
Yeah.
That was another song that, you know, I kind of listened to a lot when I was younger, so definitely sang along to that one a lot.
Because you are Jamaican-Canadian?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to send you... So I manage a band called The Steadies.
Okay.
And we got a single coming out in a few weeks with a young Jamaican-Canadian, Cairo McLean. He's from Toronto.
Okay.
He's 15 and he's won 2 Junos already.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big time.
And it's a really good tune we got coming out. So I'll hit you up with it.
For sure. Definitely take a listen.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for making the time. Best of luck in the playoffs.
Thank you.
In France and everything you got going on.
Thank you.
We're a big fan and appreciate making the time.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, Seth. Thank you. Thanks.